The story of Bruce, now Caitlyn Jenner, has been one that has been looked at in a sensationalistic way, has been even the fodder for jokes, and actually has made some people angry. Strangely enough, my next guest says that for the transgender community, Jenner may just be the stellar ambassador that they've needed to bring people to greater understanding of why this transformation is what some people decide on. Here to share her insight into the story of psychiatrist and chief medical officer for Anchor Behavioral Health, we say good morning to Dr. Nzinga Harrison. Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning, Chris.
And the doctor's website is nzingaharrisonmd.com. Find out more about her work. And she's an expert in many fields that she makes herself available for discussions and insight for. And, you know, for someone like Jenner right now, Doctor, how important, I mean, obviously the decision to do what Jenner did was on a personal level important, but for the transgender community, especially for teens where there's a high suicide rate, and we'll get into some of the facts and figures in a moment, how important is it for Jenner to try to avoid as much as possible the sensationalistic element, especially with the ETV show, because like it or not, Jenner is going to be looked upon as a guiding light, a role model, whatever the term you might want to use?
You know, it's a great question. So the sensationalism can definitely have its negative parts, but the positive part of that is that he's really making this issue widely addressed and showing it from an angle of having familial support and using social media and, you know, TV media to really be able to generate a general public support that our transgender youth have not previously had access to. So while there's definitely criticism, like people say, oh, you know, Bruce, now Caitlyn, just wants to make an extra dollar, he will make an extra dollar. He'll make several of them. But in the process, he will likely save many transgender youth lives.
And you mentioned social media. Caitlyn Jenner's account broke a record for the fastest time to reach 1 million followers on Twitter. Actually, beat Obama's record. Took 4 hours and 3 minutes for Caitlyn.
Isn't that amazing?
For Caitlyn Jenner.
It's really just a reflection of how desperate people are for this information.
And, of course, 17.1 million people watched the 2020 interview, which you go back in ratings history, that used to be not enough to even keep a show on the air, but with the fragmentation of TV, that's you get anything above 10 million people watching. You've accomplished something, especially for the length of time that interview was. I guess, too, because when Jenner being 65, mm-hmm. A lot of people always thought that transgender or sex change was something of a physical nature, or the XY chromosomes, not to be sarcastic here, actually being question marks in some people's physical makeup. But does this demonstrate, because Jenner went 65 years, for the most part, one would assume, in some sort of balance and identity of who he was at the time, that it's an emotional, psychological issue more than we thought?
You know, so it's definitely a combination. It's biological, it's psychological, and it's social, just like every single human behavior that exists in those three pots. But what we know, that even though Jenner is 65 right now, this is not new for her. So I read in an article that she said as she was doing press for receiving her gold medal, she had on women's underwear underneath her warm-up suit and thought to herself, people have no idea who I really am. And that's what we really find with individuals in the transgender community, because it has been so unaccepted, and actually the risk of, you know, being harassed and being physically harmed and experiencing violence is a significant risk, that, and losing your family is a significant risk, that even though gender expression really comes very young in childhood, right? So think about the entire spectrum. You definitely know children that we would say, oh, he's a real boy's boy. And you know children that we say, oh my goodness, she's the girliest little girl I've ever met. And those expressions come very early, all along to, you know, the tomboy and then the boy who's more feminine than the typical boy's boy. You can see that in children very early. And while all of those will not develop a transgender identity, some fraction of those do, and they just hide it their entire lives until they get to the point where they have enough kind of individual strength and community and familial support to be able to transition to their true gender.
This all made me think back to a story. There was an American jazz musician, bandleader, Billy Tipton, mm-hmm. back in the 1930s, 40s, into the 50s, that Billy was actually a woman who lived and even married and lived his entire life or her entire life as a male. And granted, we didn't have the media and the TMZs back in those days, but I guess that shows, again, psychologically, how far someone finds the need to go to find what their identity is or who their identity is.
You know, that's exactly right. And when Caitlin first did the interview where she told the world that she would be transitioning from Bruce to Caitlin, then my husband said something really poignant. He actually had a dream about it, so it affected him all the way, took it into his dreams. And he said he had a dream that people told him, "You're gay," and that he had to live his entire life. He was married to another man. He had children, and he was like, it just didn't feel right because I knew that I wasn't gay. And he said, I imagine that's how it was for Bruce Jenner, with people saying you have to be this male gender when that's just really not who he was. And I thought that was a beautiful conceptualization of it from, you know, someone who is what we call cisgender. So my husband identifies with the sex that he was born with and heterosexual. It was a great way to kind of put himself in Caitlin's shoes to say, like, what must it be like to go your entire life forced to live life as someone you are not?
Talking with Dr. Nzinga Harrison, who is a psychiatrist, chief medical officer for Anka Behavioral Health, and NzingaHarrisonMD.com on the web. And you are listening to Issues and Ideas. I mentioned statistics. This might be surprising for the listener right now. There are estimated over 700,000 transgender people living in America. And if you look at, this was from a 2009 survey, National Center for Transgender Equality and the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, 13% of respondents were unemployed. That at that time was about double the national average versus the national unemployment rate. 47% of those surveyed said they experienced an adverse job action, didn't get a job, were denied a promotion, and they were fired. 97% of those surveyed reported experiencing harassment or mistreatment on the job. 15% of transgenders surveyed lived on $10,000 per year or less, which was double the rate of the poverty level to that degree of the general population. We get to, when you think of teens who are developing this understanding that who I am is who I appear is not who I am. Mm-hmm. And with that level of unacceptance that we just, those stats dictate for the workplace, doctor, where is a teen's mind right now if they're caught in that flux of, well, this is who people want me to be or think I am, but this is not who I am?
It can be a desperate, desperate place. So adolescence, just period, is a very volatile, difficult, emotional time. If you've ever known an adolescent and at some point in your life you were one, then you know this. And what we know is that the way we protect our adolescents from kind of falling prey to depression and anxiety and, you know, emotional instability is to really wrap a loving, supportive environment around them for whoever their authentic self is. And so transgender teens too often don't have access to that supportive wrap of loving arms to help them navigate just the baseline adolescence tumult that comes with that developmental period, in addition to kind of trying to figure out their gender identity. And so what we know, the National School Climate Survey tells us that 80% of our transgender adolescents feel unsafe at school. And they don't just feel unsafe at school, they actually are unsafe. Over 70% of them are being sexually harassed. A lot of them don't have familial support at home. They can't establish their peer group, which is one of the most important tasks of that adolescent period. And as a result, as many as 45% of our transgender youth have seriously considered committing suicide and have actually attempted. So this is a serious, serious issue that we have the ability to prevent just by, you know, creating a climate in which you can question your gender And when you figure out what your gender identity is, we will support you in that. We won't discriminate against you. We won't harass you. We won't commit violence against you. And if we can, as a society, begin to create that loving, supporting environment for our transgender youth, we can see the suicide risk come down.
And certainly for the person on the outside, looking at someone who is going through that moment of their life, you know, whose right is it to say, I mean, you can disagree with someone's choice in their life for religious, for philosophical, whatever the reasons are, but that disagreement certainly does not give anyone a license to perpetrate anything negative upon that person.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And, you know, the Pew Foundation did a study. They showed that only about 8% of people have ever knowingly met a transgender person. And the word knowingly in that sentence is really important, because we've probably all met transgender person and they either were not free to be themselves in the environment that we met them. But when you don't know people, then you have this whole concept, you know, and stereotypes and negative thoughts that you can project on that group. But as the environment becomes safer and transgendered individuals are able to be themselves, like this goes back to Caitlin having the e-show and letting us follow the process and letting us into her life, as more people feel like they know an individual who is transgendered, discrimination will decrease and support in the environment will increase.
And from what I've seen of the article, I had a preview of it. It sounds like Jenner does have that vision of Jen actually still wants to be called him, at least at this point, even though the article referred from Buzz Bissinger in Vanity Fair referred to Jenner as a her. But that's one of the roles that I think Jenner is willingly and eagerly accepting. And we'll see how the TV show unfolds, how that comes across as far as making that connection between these two elements of society. I'll learn more about the work and the insights of Dr. Nzinga Harrison. That's her website, nzingaharrisonmd.com. She is also Chief Medical Officer for Anka Behavioral Health. Dr. Harrison, thanks so much for being here this morning.
Thanks so much for having me, Chris.